Today we begin with a series of three sessions on the development of tooth. And this is the last of the developmental parts of this course. But of course, as you can well imagine, it's bridging into the next part of the course, which is the histology of the dental tissue. So this is a very important series of sessions, but at the same time, part of it will come back as we move on to the next set. Now here, this is a picture that you all know, but it bears repeating, and that is that the tissues of the tooth proper. Tooth proper, there are four of them. Three are mineralized, enamel, dentin, and cementum, and one is non-mineralized, it's the pulp. The pulp and the dentin, as you will see, are very closely related, really should be considered as one tissue and one topic, but because of the many details that are important for these tissues, we will divide them up, but that is an artificial division. The pulp really is part of the dentin and vice versa. The cementum, which is also a mineralized tissue, is the tissue that is really functionally part of the periodontium. So while we are talking about it as a dental tissue, we will come back to it when we start talking about periodontium. It is going to be a separate topic in that area. Now, the development of teeth really is only one of an example of many, because many of the types of organs that we have really are formed in similar ways. We have, as an example, I'm showing it here, there are many organs such as hair, glands, nails, feathers, although we don't have many of those, but the thing is that we all start out in the same way. We start out with an epithelial placoat, and that means that you have a thickening of epithelium right here. That is what is meant by the term placoat. And then you get associated with that epithelial placoat a condensation of mesenchyme. And after that, two possibilities exist. One is that the epithelium will start to invaginate the underlying mesenchyme, or the second is that the underlying mesenchyme is in fact producing such an enormous spurt of growth that you get this kind of an elevation like this, and gradually the structure becomes larger. So those are the two possibilities. The epithelium grows in, or the mesenchyme grows out. Those are what you can get. In most instances in the human body, this is what we are seeing, the ingrowth of the epithelium. And typically we start out with a little bud, and then you get what is considered to be the development of shape of the future organ that you are developing. And that stage in which that shape is laid down is known as morphogenesis. And so in the case of a tooth, which is clearly shown here, you start out with a structure that kind of forms on the inside a concavity, and that concavity gradually assumes the shape of a tooth. And so at the interface between the epithelium and the mesenchyme, the shape of the tooth is becoming evident. There are other examples. This, of course, is an example of a hair follicle, and the hair follicle has a different shape, grows in a different way, and ends up in with a different structure. And then you have also situations where you form glands, and in the case of the glands, what you get is an ingrowth and then a branching and further branching, and at the end you have this branched structure inside the mesenchyme that we call a gland. The feather is the one on the side here, which is very nice, but only interesting for comparative reasons. Now, when we talk about tooth formation, we have two tissues that are involved. And the tissues that are involved are the epithelium of the oral surface, and what you see here, this is the tongue, and here is Meckel's cartilage. This is the mandible, so you kind of recognize where you are. It's a three-dimensional, two-dimensional picture. This is a lip, and here is the upper lip. Fine, everything clear. And what you're seeing now here is, here's the oral ectoderm, and the oral ectoderm begins to have this ingrowth in the underlying mesenchyme. So it's at the interface of the ectoderm and the connective tissue. The connective tissue is neurocrest derived. We know that already. We have gone over that, and that is something that's important. So the two tissues that are involved in the development of a tooth are oral ectoderm and neurocrest derived mesenchyme. Now, I mentioned already morpho differentiation. We are now going to add to that. There are two types of differentiation. Morpho differentiation, that is the establishment of the shape of the tooth, and that occurs by the differential growth of the epithelium, and we'll go into that in some considerable detail. And then the second one is cytodifferentiation, that is the differentiation of the cells that are going to give rise to the different tissues. So there is a different activity that leads to the development of odontoblast. That is a different activity that leads to development of ameloblast and cementoblast. So these are the two important periods of differentiation. Morpho differentiation always precedes, always comes first. It precedes the cytodifferentiation. So morpho differentiation in any particular part of the tooth must be completed before cytodifferentiation can take place. Now, the initiation of tooth development occurs roughly at 4 to 5 weeks of the development of the human embryo. It's very early. And we typically will call this the initiation. That is really the first beginning. It's even before morpho differentiation. And in this initiation period, we develop the dental placode. Now, it's good to remember what you have at this time. Actually, this is already a little bit older. This is mouse, and this is mouse also. But it is roughly at the time when you begin to form the primary palate that the first dental placodes start to show. And they show on the different facial processes. So the upper jaw has four facial processes that contribute to it. There's the maxillary, the medial nasal, here are the medial nasal, and here's the maxillary again. And so on each of these facial processes in the upper jaw, the dental placode begins to form. So you have one on the maxillary process, one on the other maxillary process, and here two on the medial nasal process. So in the upper jaw, you start out with four separate placodes that very rapidly become one continuous placode. So, but they start out separately. The formation of these placodes, of this thickening of the epithelium, is under the influence of a variety of growth factors, and they show here wingless fibroblast growth factor, especially growth factor 8, transforming growth factor beta 2, and something that is active displacement receptor, which is for us right now not important, but is mentioned here as a fourth component. So all of these growth factors are involved, and the ones that are not going to be helpful in this situation are bone morphogenetic proteins. So bone morphogenetic proteins are being secreted, but they are being secreted to stop any activity of dental placode formation out here. So there is no dental placode formation here, which is under the influence of bone morphogenetic proteins. So the bone morphogenetic proteins define, in a sense, limit the area of the dental placode, while the other growth factors are the ones that actually make the cells proliferate. And the same thing is true for transforming growth factor beta 1. So there are growth factors that stimulate the development of the dental placode, and then there are growth factors that limit the development of the dental placode laterally, so there's only a very limited area where the placode forms. Now, what you are going to see now is a series of stages, and the stages that we are going to look at in the morpho differentiation are based on the shape of the enamel organ. So this, and the enamel organ is the epithelial structure. Okay? And so what you will find in these stages is first the dental placode. Then you find a stage in which you get this kind of arrangement. That's known as the bud. Then there comes a stage where you get further ingrowth, and now it makes this kind of shape. That's known as the cap stage. And finally, the final stage of morphodifferentiation is when you get this very beautiful enamel organ that you see here. And now you begin, so this is known as the bell stage. And the bell stage is the stage at which the morphodifferentiation stops and the cytodifferentiation begins. Now let's look at the various activities that you see here. The separate placode fields that we had originally one here and one here and one here and one here, they are beginning all to coalesce. So they coalesce and they become this one single upper and lower arch. The lower arch only has two placode fields because there's a mandibular process on one side and a mandibular process on the other. So in the lower jaw, you have two separate placode fields that are coming together. And they form what is described as a catenary arch. Anyone knows what a catenary arch is, or this is total nonsense? Yeah. It's described by?
X squared.
That's nice. Can you give us a real life? Let me give you this. Take a bar, suspend the chain from it.
Described by a
parabolic curve. No. Bar, chain, suspend from it, catenary arch. Okay, what can I tell you? That's the shape. It could, in fact, be a parabolic curve. It's been a long time since I thought about parabolic curves. Get that information to me, and I'll give you an A. Or an H, whatever. Okay. Now, the neurocrest formation, the neurocrest cells that participate in the development of this tooth, come from the second rhombomere. The second rhombomere has cells moving into the mandibular arch and its outgrowth, which is the maxillary arch. Now, the cells, these neurocrest cells that migrate and become tooth-forming cells are among the last to start migrating. So the first migrations have already passed, but then very late in the sequence, the odontogenic cells come. And they actually move in the direction of the placodal epithelium. The placodal epithelium start expressing fibroblast growth factor 8, and fibroblast growth factor 8 brings these neurocrest cells to the area. And what you're getting is what looks like this. This is actually a sagittal section of a human embryo. You're seeing here the paracordal cartilage. You're seeing here the tongue. You see the tongue is already very, very well developed. Here is Meckel's cartilage beginning to form. Here is the mandible beginning to form. And now when you look in these areas right here and right here, upper and lower jaw, what you're seeing is a placode. Okay, here's a placode. And here is the placode. And you're seeing underneath it a condensation of mesenchyme. And this mesenchyme is known as ectomesenchyme. Some of you have questions about this particular term. When you see the term ectomesenchyme, what you are indicating is that this is mesenchyme formed from neurocrest cells. So that term ectomesenchyme is very specific for neurocrest cells. And so under the influence of the fibroblast growth factor 8 that is produced by the placodal cells, these mesenchymal cells move in that direction, and they now become committed dental mesenchyme. We'll come back to that in the next session after one session after the next. Okay. So the stages in tooth development, now this is much neater, so I'll show it to you here, are initiation, morphogenesis, that is when you go from the placode to the bud, the cap, and the bell. And then after the bell, you start going into cytodifferentiation, where at least when you start up, you have the formation of a myeloblast and odontoblast, the root is still forming later on. And at that point, when these cells become active, we talk about the apposition stage. So after the bud, the cap, and the bell stage, we're talking about apposition stage, and the final stage is the stage of root development, which coincides with the activity of the tooth eruption. So this is the group of stages of tooth development, and let's now go and go to the individual parts of these stages.
Is that eruption or emergence?
No, that's eruption because it's the whole action. From the time when the tooth starts moving, which is an eruptive movement well before emergence, it's forming its roots. Okay, so that is truly eruption. Okay, so the first thing then is we develop along the line of the placode, and the placode is really marked as being this whole area right here. Along that line, a series of 10 buds, because we are still in the deciduous dentition, develop along the lower and upper jaw arches. And the bud is shown here. When you begin to actually grow deeper into the underlying mesenchyme, you started out with this. This is a placode, but when you get to this stage, you're beginning to form bud. And just to make sure that you understand, where I draw that red line, more or less, it's not very precise, that is the site of the basal lamina. Keep that in mind, because as you are beginning to see the changes in the epithelial structure, the basal lamina and its position become important. And so, as you can see here, this is a three-dimensional reconstruction over here, done by a now deceased colleague of ours. You see here a little swelling here, a little swelling here, one here, the beginning here, and there's going to be one more over here. And these buds are, of course, the future sites of the developing deciduous teeth. And so now what you're going to find is that along that dental arch that you have, at these specific sites, you form the buds, and this is now clearly a bud, and again, let me draw out for you the basal lamina here. And so that you're seeing this sequence here, this is placode, this is bud, this is already cap. But now what we have drawn down here at the base, anywhere that is not in a site where you had those 10 developing teeth, you continue to have just this little thickening. So between the sites of the developing teeth, you have for a while yet the epithelial thickening, but it doesn't go on to form all these other stages. Okay, now, what is happening next? So far what we have had is just a series of cell divisions that just enlarged the mass of the epithelium, and these epithelial cells just form a more or less spherical ball. But now, by 8 weeks, the cap stage begins to result. And what's happening now is that we have several activities. First of all, there is a differential epithelial proliferation. So the cells on the outside and the periphery begin to proliferate more than the more central cells. There is selective programmed cell death through apoptosis, and we'll show you exactly where that occurs. Also, what happens is the epithelial cells inside this ball that you originally had are rearranging themselves a little bit, and so you have loss of some epithelial attachments, formation of new attachments. And then finally, there is, in fact, you cannot have a growth of a structure without affecting the surrounding mesenchyme. So what you need to do is you have to have localized proteolysis of the basal lamina components, and you have to affect also some of the surrounding mesenchyme. So that plays a role as well. Nobody really has looked very closely at that, but that's another activity that has to occur. But what you begin to see at this point is a structure that looks like this. And this is actually a very nice cap stage. And what you now see is several things. And let me just go over that, because there are things now that need to be seen. Here, first of all, is the outline of the mesenchyme. And the mesenchyme forms a very solid condensed ball. If you see the term condensed mesenchyme, this is what you mean. Okay? Compare that with the mesenchyme out here, which is very much looser. The condensed mesenchyme really is a very solid, coherent mass of cells with very little extracellular matrix. You see that the epithelial structure now is a little bit further away from the oral ectoderm, and this now is known as the dental lamina. So as the tooth gradually comes to lie deeper in the jaw, mostly because all the other tissues are growing out in this direction, it gradually pulls away from the oral ectoderm, but it still remains attached to it by the dental lamina. And then here you see the outline of the cap. You see the outline of this cap right here. And you see that there is a convex side and there is a concave side. Okay? Now, the concave side is what we are really mostly interested in, because that is the location where the shaping of the tooth occurs. So it is at the concave side that that happens. Now, two more things that are worth noting at this point. This little structure here, that is known as the vestibular lamina. We will come back to that in a little while. That is actually the precursor of what is going to form the oral vestibule, the shape, the space between the lips and the alveolar process, and between the cheeks and the alveolar process. So the oral vestibule is being formed by the vestibular lamina, and that's a whole separate thing. But we'll later in this hour we'll address that. But now the most important thing that you're seeing here is this mass of cells. And this mass of cells is known as the enamel knot. Hold on a second, I'm going to go it here because that's important. Oh, it's written here. Good God, that was very clever. So the enamel knot is this structure right here. And this is, it used to be poo-pooed a little bit. Oh, yeah, interesting, but not really very much importance. Actually, this is turning out to be one of the most important components of the enamel organ. It is the signaling center. This is the center that decides that you're going to have a buccal and a lingual site. This is also going to be its subsequent formations. It's going to form the cusps of molar-shaped teeth. So this is really very critical. And this enamel knot is the area where the cells are no longer proliferating. The proliferation occurs at the periphery. But in the enamel knot, you see programmed cell death. So there's programmed cell death, and there is the activity of producing a lot of growth factors that lead to the, and that really direct the development of the enamel organ. So this now is a really critical structure. Let's see it again. Here, cap stage applies to the shape of the enamel organ, and this is what is the cap. And here again, in this cap, this is the enamel knot. Okay? And when you look at it in three-dimensional reconstruction, it's kind of cute. Here's the vestibular side, so this would be the area, this would be the labial, this would be the lingual. And you see two things. You see the vestibular lamina, which is over here, and you see also something new, and that is that there is already the beginning of a permanent successor. So at the cap stage of tooth development for the deciduous teeth, the beginnings of the permanent successes are beginning to show. I'll come back to that. All right. Let's talk about two statements. Tooth germ. It's a kind of a funny name. I always thought it was very old-fashioned, but it actually is a useful term because when you talk about a tooth germ, you're talking about two structures, the epithelial enamel organ and, number two, the condensed ectomesenchyme. The enamel organ, let's be totally clear. I know we know that already. We have covered this ground before, but it's important to say it again. The enamel organ, as far as the cells of the enamel organ are concerned, are responsible for the formation of ameloblasts and therefore for enamel formation. That's what the enamel organ will do. Name is very well chosen. The ectomesenchyme will form the odontoblasts that are going on to form the dentin. It will form the pulp, and it will form the cementum, the periodontal ligament, and the alveolar bone proper. So that's quite a lot. So enamel organ, which is really important for the developing of the shape, really only goes on to form one tissue of the teeth, while the ectomesenchyme is going to form everything else, including all the periodontal tissues. Now we come to the final stage of the morphodifferentiation. It's known as the Bell stage. And in the Bell stage, you now have clearly distinctive four different epithelial layers. The outer enamel epithelium, or OEE, on the convex surface. The stellate reticulum, or SR, which is all of this from here to here. That is all stellate reticulum. And that is a very unique structure. The stratum intermedium, which lies between the stellate reticulum and the inner surface, which is the inner enamel epithelium, or IEE. So in the Bell stage, we now separate out these four epithelial layers. And these four epithelial layers are there mostly to support... the three epithelial layers here are there mostly to support these cells, the so-called inner enamel epithelium, because it's the inner enamel epithelium that is going to give rise to the ameloblasts. Okay? So this is actually, for the cytodifferentiation point of view, which is going to come next, this is going to be the group of cells that are going to form enamel. But now let me show you what I consider to be the end stage of morphodifferentiation, at least in the area of this region. What kind of tooth do you think this is? Incisor. Good. Dental anatomy did work. This is an incisor tooth, incisal edge, a little cingulum over here beginning to develop. You notice that the incisal edge is very, very sharp. The cingulum is not completely developed yet, and what that means is that morphodifferentiation here is done, but morphodifferentiation down here is not done. So morphodifferentiation is a process that will continue to go further in an apical direction for a long time to go. And that makes an important statement. Morphodifferentiation and cytodifferentiation are occurring in an occluso-apical gradient. An occluso-apical gradient. And that means that the oldest part of the tooth, where the first shape is established and where the first dental tissues are formed, occurs nearest the oral ectoderm, either the incisal edge or the cusps of the molar tooth. Now, I want to just take the opportunity here to draw out the characteristics of the four epithelial cell types, because they are very distinctly different in the Bell stage, and they all are having their own roles, which we will come back to when we talk about the development of enamel. So we start out with the OEE. And the OEE, they are cuboidal type cells. They can be a little flatter, not much. So the OEE is shaped like this. Forms a continuous layer on the outside of the enamel organ. The stellate reticulum. It's known as stellate because the cells are relatively star-shaped. And so they have a nucleus, all right. And then these cells have all kinds of long cell extensions. They look like fibroblasts. And for somebody who doesn't know their stuff, they might be misinterpreted as fibroblasts, but they are epithelial cells. But they are epithelial cells with lots of extracellular matrix separating them. So they are attached in these areas and the cell processes to other stellate reticular cells, but there's a lot of extracellular matrix there and a lot of hydrated extracellular matrix. So these cells start producing extracellular matrix, and then that hydration increases the volume of that stellate reticulum enormously. Why do we have it? We probably have it to make space for, this is kind of stupid arguing, but it does make space for the developing enamel. In order for the developing ameloblast to start laying down enamel, they have to have a place to back into, and they have that in the form of the stellate reticulum. The stellate reticulum is present in its most extreme form in the Bell stage. The moment the ameloblast start laying down enamel, the stellate reticulum very quickly collapses. So there is that kind of a relationship. Stratum intermedium has multiple cell layers. They are kind of looking like this. Usually two or three, occasionally four. And the stratum intermedium is literally the intermediate layer between the stellate reticulum and the inner enamel epithelium. Stratum intermedium in many ways supports the activities of the ameloblast, and certainly it supports the mineralization processes once the enamel is laid down. And then finally, the inner enamel epithelial cells. The inner enamel epithelial cells are short columnar. Best description. They are considerably taller than the outer enamel epithelial cells. Here is the basal lamina, here is the basal lamina. So this is BL, and here is the BL. But it is clearly a different shape of cell compared to the outer enamel epithelium. So you can always tell one from the other. The inner enamel epithelial cells will in the future become pre-ameloblasts and then ameloblasts. And that's a process that will take us a little time to go over in the future, but not now. Okay, there is something else, and that is that in the Bell stage we also have the mesenchymal components. This is a very early Bell stage. You see here how the stellate reticulum is just swelling up, but it is not yet happening here. When you have something, this structure here, it's known as an enamel cord, but that has no role the same way we talked about the enamel knot. Enamel knot has a role, but the enamel cord really does not. It's just the last remnant of the solid epithelial mass before the stellate reticulum gets more extensive. What you're now seeing is the other components, and that is the mesenchyme in the concavity of the tooth germ and the mesenchyme at the periphery of the tooth germ. And those two have different names. In the concavity of the tooth germ, we call it dental papilla. In the periphery of the tooth germ, it's called dental sac, or dental follicle is another term that is used. I prefer the more straightforward dental sac. because it's literally a sac-like structure surrounding the whole thing. And the dental sac is really the forerunner of the future periodontal tissue. So these cells are going to give rise to cementum, to periodontal ligaments, and to alveolar bone, while the dental papilla is going to give rise to the dentin and the pulp. Seeing here something else, you see here another structure. This is a new structure. This is known as the successional lamina. That is the lamina that gives rise to the successor tooth. Successional lamina is always on the lingual or palatal side. Oh boy, be careful. On the lingual or palatal side of the tooth germ. And so if you see a successional lamina the way you see it here, that means that this is lingual and this is labial. Okay? That is an immediate thing that you can say. When you see a successional lamina like this, you know the orientation of this section. Alright, this is a beauty. This is really nice. Because what you're seeing here now is the bottom end of the bell stage enamel organ. And all of the various tissues that I described, all these epithelial layers, are shown beautifully here. And there's no question that the one on the outside here, the short columnar or almost cuboidal, that is the outer enamel epithelium. And that, is there something here? No, I actually have to draw my own lines. My God. Okay, stellate reticulum is here. Stratum intermedium is this set of cells. And the inner enamel epithelium is here. Dental sac, dental papilla. Okay? Now, what you here now see also is something else. Where the outer enamel epithelium and the inner enamel epithelium are continuous, this is known as the cervical loop. So that's just a description of the bottom end of the epithelial bell. Now, the cervical loop is where the further apical growth of this epithelial structure takes place. And you can see that quite beautifully here. Here, here, here. Everywhere in this area there are mitoses. As long as there are mitoses taking place, this is a very actively growing structure. So the cervical loop continues to have further proliferation in an apical direction, and that is where the morphodifferentiation continues. In the cuspal and in the incisal areas, morphodifferentiation is complete. Here is the stellate reticulum. And just a reminder again that what you're having here are large intracellular spaces with proteoglycans and heparins, and it is a very hydrophilic structure. The roles of the stellate reticulum: maintenance of structural integrity, and fundamental in maintaining the tooth shape. And it's really almost like a cushion. It protects, but it also establishes the shape and the shape of the tooth to come. And what you find is that while the dental papilla is not yet fully vascularized, this is the pathway by which the vascular supply, the nutritional exchange rather, for the inner enamel epithelial cells takes place. So it has to come from the outside. It's a very interesting problem. Okay, I'd just like to show you some of the 3D reconstructions. These are pretty much near the end of the cap stage, beginning of the bell stage. And you're seeing here the first, the second, and second incisor and the canine here. And on the lingual side, you see the beginnings of the successors. Notice that each tooth has its own little successional lamina. So there's a successional lamina adjacent to the second incisor, a successional lamina as adjacent to the first incisor and to the canine. And that means, importantly, that if a deciduous tooth doesn't form, the successional lamina cannot form. And so if you have an agenesis, a non-formation of a deciduous tooth right from the start, there will not be a successor tooth. As we go further backwards, you're seeing here in the upper jaw the first permanent deciduous molar, the second deciduous molar, and indeed the first permanent molar, which forms very early on and by many people is considered to be really part of the deciduous dentition, but the one that stays behind and therefore becomes part of the permanent. Here are the two beautiful 3D reconstructions. They are done by Professor Oe, who used to work in Tokyo. And he spent his lifetime making these incredibly beautiful 3D reconstructions. And you're seeing here now, at the end of the bell stage, very nicely, these various enamel organs. Just the epithelium is shown, and you notice that all the bell stages are reached at this point and ready for the first hard tissue formation. Now, I promised myself that I was going to tell you a little bit about the vestibular lamina, and so here are the diagrams that go along with it. It's a very simple diagrams, and what these are indicating is you're seeing here the upper jaw from below, from the oral side, in both instances. This is at about 6 weeks, and this is, of course, later. Let's just say second trimester for the sake of argument. And what you're seeing is, in this case here, maxillary process, medial nasal process, and of course the same is true on the other side. And over here, you see something different. These maxillary and medial nasal processes have no separation. They are one solid mass. But in this area right here, you see that there is a separation between a lip and the alveolar process. So something happened in that intervening time to separate a lip from an alveolar process. And what happened in that period of time was that the vestibular lamina developed, and the vestibular lamina became a deep depression of epithelium in the underlying tissues, and at a certain point that epithelium centrally was lost, and you now have the epithelial lining of the vestibule. Here, for reference, of course, is the developing tooth. And, of course, the vestibular lamina has to be on the labial side of the developing tooth. It has to be, okay? Otherwise, you would be in big trouble because you would have your jaw outside your lip, and that would not be a good idea. Okay, so vestibular lamina, therefore, is an interesting structure. Now, the traditional view of a vestibular lamina relative to the dental lamina has been this one that is shown in A, where you see in yellow the dental lamina, one catenary arch, and here the vestibular lamina on the outside, a second catenary arch. And the idea was that there were two laminae and that they were kind of running parallel to each other. That is largely correct, except the vestibular lamina is a much more complicated structure than we first gave it credit for. And when you look at a large number of sections through developing teeth, you'll begin to appreciate that. Because what you will notice is that the vestibular lamina does not seem to look the same in different sections through different areas of the mouth. And essentially what you're seeing here, and this is kind of a summary diagram, you're seeing here the epithelial structure in yellow of the dental lamina with these individual tooth buds beginning to form on them. That's fine. But now look here. The vestibular lamina is a series of little irregular bulges, very transiently forming, and ridges. And occasionally they tie in with the dental lamina here and here. And so there used to be people saying, hey, well, the vestibular lamina is really connected with the dental lamina in certain areas. Correct. And actually the vestibular lamina is not one lamina, but has several structures like this. So it's a very complicated thing. In the end, it is a miracle that this whole idiotic structure gets to be one vestibule. So I'm not going to tell you this is very important. What I'm saying to you is, when you look at pictures, you sometimes cannot make sense of it unless you realize that it is much more complex than what we are telling you. So what we are telling you for the record is that there's a vestibular lamina on the outside, on the labial side of the dental lamina. It's more or less parallel, but what I'm telling you here is that the complexity is really much greater than we gave it credit for. And these are actually the sequential stages of development of these particular vestibular lamina. Mad. Totally mad. Okay. So here is the vestibular lamina. This is it. And the vestibular lamina essentially becomes a solid mass of epithelial cells. And then the epithelial cells in the center literally die and they are lost and you get a space where there first was a solid massive plug of epithelium. So that is the sequence of vestibular lamina formation. Now, in addition to the vestibular lamina, we have actually encountered three different kinds of dental laminae. Dental lamina, the parent dental lamina, is the primary lamina that connects the enamel organ to the oral ectoderm.